Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice on this bright and wonderful Friday morning. With me in studio is my assistant and co-host this morning, Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
How was your wonderful week this week when you were getting ready for today's show? It was great. It was busy, wasn't it?
Busy, busy week, yes.
Yeah, you did a great job of setting everything up. Thank you for what you do. Bill Ackerley is with us as well. And our very good friend, Roman Campuzano, is here. Good morning, Roman.
Good morning.
You might recognize that voice because Roman's been with us through Jump in Tucson for the first 13 months, and then we switched over to The Morning Voice. And Roman sat in for me a couple of times as a guest host and interviewed people when I was back at a wedding and some other things that I was doing. And in that time frame, you have come full circle in your insurance career, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so yes. The last time we talked, you were with another company, but one of your first engagements was to be involved with the folks at Farmers Insurance. And so you became an agent and was working with them for some time, and then off doing some other wonderful things, and then now back with them again, right?
Yes, yes. And those wonderful things in between kind of created a, as you said, a full circle. In essence, it's like just a greatness sandwich, man.
Well, you know, you have done so many things. You have, tell us a little bit about what some of the stuff you've done. You've, you know, been vice president of a chamber. You've, you know, developed companies. You've done lots of things. Most recently, working in the insurance space. But now you're back helping other insurance agents at Farmers. So tell us a little bit about your track of how you got to where you are today.
Will do. So at Farmers Insurance, I was originally an agent, still wet behind the ears. I've never owned a business before, aside from my DJ type of stuff that I did when I was a lot younger.
Which we still do every once in a while. I get to go see you every once in a while.
Yeah, and that's always fun,
One
too.
Great hit after another, Roman Campuzano.
Yeah. You know, I use that thing that you taught me, where the people tell you to turn it down, so you turn the wrong lever down.
Down a little bit more, and you're turning it up. Now, down a little bit more, and just a little bit more. Okay, that's perfect. Leave it right there.
I did that just the other day. I wanted to call you.
You're turning a knob that's not doing anything to the
right,
sound.
Right, right.
It's all in your mind.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
So it's usually the mother of the bride, too, that's telling you to turn it down.
Always. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, you know, not only a business outside of that, not ever having an LLC or anything like that. You know, I jumped into this Farmers Insurance thing.
Right.
And it was really just boots on the ground up, going out there, knocking on doors, saying hey to mom and dad.
Right.
talking to their friends, talking to my friends, and just kind of growing it.
Building that network.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And prior to that, I thought I had a pretty good network. But, you know, and that created an even larger opportunity for me to serve the community, to serve my family,
right.
And to serve, my clients, of course. So
right.
It was a fun time. I learned how to network. I learned how to sit at a board table. You know, I see these kids now in a boardroom, like, you are so lucky, you have no clue.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was 35 years old the first time I sat at a boardroom table.
Right.
And here you are at 12, you know.
Sitting at a board table. You know, you have just had an amazing track record in terms of community involvement, the number of things that you have done, everything from the helping with the Blue Blazers at the Arizona Bowl to helping with the nonprofits and organizations. It seems when we're together and we're at the Arizona Sands Club or at an event at Union Public House or something, how many people you know. It is amazing your network that you have grown over the last decade or so of people that have done business with you or have you engaged with in the community. So networking is really important, isn't it, in business to be successful?
Absolutely. It's really just a matter of just getting out there. If you are invited, go.
Right.
And if you're not, do something equally as productive. And if you aren't, just don't be on the couch.
Right.
That's really what it comes down to. Yeah. If you can't make it, you can't make it. But be somewhere equally, you know, supportive and of the growth and that you want to see in your career.
Yeah. You know, Morgan, you've been with us out on. It's amazing how important networking is. That's one of the things you've learned here at Ackerley Advertising and at The Morning Voice is how important networking is, and to watch Roman do his thing is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. Networking is so important. It's kind of the only thing, especially in advertising or in insurance, knowing everybody is important.
Right, right. That's, we built our business on that networking thing. One of the things that people, you know, I have young students at the University of Arizona that I teach, and I talk to them about what's coming up for them, and obviously career choices and where they're going to live and what kind of, are they going to rent, or are they going to buy a home? But one of the things that young people have to decide is insurance, and it's important to get them started in the right trajectory and do the right thing with insurance. But also people who are established need to kind of reevaluate every once in a while and find out for themselves whether or not they have enough insurance to cover as their responsibilities grow. So does their need for more insurance, right?
Absolutely. And you know, the main thing that I take a look at is when was the last time your insurance was revisited?
Right.
And that becomes super duper important. You know, going down my path, as you were mentioning, you know, once I was at Farmers, the only reason why I left Farmers in the first place was to go to the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce,
right,
where my network blew up substantially. That's where I met you. Yeah. That's where I met Bill. That's where I met Morgan now. And, you know, we, and growing that, and, you know, the Rito Racetrack, I missed that place. Yeah. You know,
we had some fun there, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah. All the different nonprofits and the different things. Your nonprofit, Coaches for Charity, and the turkeys we deliver, you know, the
Thanksgiving,
the community
boxes,
involvement. You know, it's a journey. And, you know, coming full circle, growing that network, learning a lot about business, helping businesses grow and helping them establish their LLC themselves, helping them, you know, to, from the ground up, sometimes with grants, sometimes with loaned sources. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a tremendous thing to watch a community and especially a company grow. And that's kind of where I came back to Farmers as an agency business consultant to help agents, help our entire agency grow in people and also grow in volume within their individual agencies.
And you helped me for the couple of times that I made a run at the mayor's office. You helped me. And one of the things that I was impressed with you is that whole mentality of if you're invited, go. I think between you and me and Sixto, we must have gone to 500 events over the course of a couple of years.
At least. I think there's closer to 1,000.
Yeah.
Because we would leave one place to be at another place, and then when we're at that place, we get invited to another place.
Right.
We'd be at three places in just a matter of a few hours.
But that's how you build your network, and that's how you build your value as a company or as an LLC for yourself or whatever, as a person, is to be out there and be accessible to people and get to know each other. It's hard, to be honest with you. It's hard. It takes its toll on you but if you're a business person and you want to be successful, having people know who you are, you got to be your own promoter. Like P.T. Barnum once said, you got to be able to talk about yourself and be able to help other people. So when it comes to Farmers and what you're doing, and what I see in your career is service to customers, service to clients, service to companies, and service now to agents to help them build their business. Your whole focus is servant leadership and focusing on helping other people. So what's your perspective on how that has made you be successful and get you back to this pretty important position that you're in now?
Well, you know, the biggest thing, I would kind of circle back to network in a little bit, but, you know, it's also looking at others requires a lot of self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires coaches like yourself, mm-hmm. job coaches, people in the community that are helping me grow as a person, mm-hmm. so I can help others grow. It's all from within, and
right.
that's what I really come to find, is that the more you're in touch with yourself, the easier it is for you to your cup overrunneth, if you will.
My friend and your friend who you introduced me to, Moises Gomez, was at my mm-hmm. class this last week, speaking to my students about communication and leadership. And by the way, you're going to be coming into my class and speaking as well. But what Moises said, he says, what's the one person, who is the one person that you speak with more than anybody else in your entire life? And that his response was, he asked the students, you know, and they kind of kind of looked at him and glazed over, and he said, it's yourself. And having a sincere, honest conversation with yourself about humility and vulnerability and how important that is for success is to be able to have that self-perspective of how you can grow and how you can be a better leader, how you can be a better servant leader, and how you can do things to better the community and also the companies and clients that you're working with. That's a really important perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, when we come back after the break, what I'd like to talk about is what you're doing now as a agency business consultant, helping build businesses for other farmers' agents and getting the overall farmers' footprint in Tucson expanded and growing as, you know, insurance is facing a challenging time, especially in places like Florida and the Gulf and along the eastern seaboard and certainly in the California area with the wildfires. And so there's a lot of attention on insurance, yes, but we all need it. If you have a house, if you have a place to live, you have a car, you have a life, you're going to need some insurance, and so it's important. So we'll talk a little bit about that and what you're doing as an agency business consultant. This is the Morning Voice on KVOI. This is the success segment where we talk about organizations and people that are doing well and being successful in our community. That's what makes Tucson tick, is having people that have a passion for the Old Pueblo.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back after the break. This is the Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to the Morning Voice. This is a great format that we have, the Morning Voice. We have Fridays we talk about success. Later on this morning, we'll be talking about Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. On Monday, our good friend Lydia Randa will be here with the Arizona Rainmakers talking about education and community building and all the great things. She had a great show on Monday, and we're really glad that she's joined the team. General Ted Maxwell will be here on Tuesday talking about engagement. Grant, our good buddy Grant from the Union Public House, will talk about food for thought and restaurant tours and civic involvement. And then yesterday was a neat show. We had Tom Moulton on. He was live from the rodeo parade. The 100th anniversary of the Tucson Rodeo was this weekend. And it was great to have Tom out on the wagons doing a live remote from the actual site of the parade. So
so you said Tom's back on the wagon? Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tom's back on the wagon. We'll have to give him some.
Sorry, Tom.
We'll have to give you some. With us this morning on the Morning Voice is my good friend and executive assistant, I call her. Bill and I were teasing. We called her the CEO of Ackerley Advertising. We keep trying to talk her into being involved in the agency after she finishes her master's degree at the U of A. So good morning, Morgan Murphy.
Good morning.
I call you Morgan Murphy McBride, so I think that's a good Morgan. Morgan is engaged and will be married at some point down the line. So she has a wonderful fiance who's a very nice young man. And Bill Ackley's with us, and our good friend Roman Campuzano. So
good morning.
Good morning back to you. You are a great friend, and you're a great friend of the show. You've sat in for me as a guest host, but your forte is insurance, and you are now back full circle with Farmers Insurance, and you are an agency business consultant helping build the businesses of other Farmers Insurance, who were kind of like when you first started, you needed mentors and coaches and so forth to help you build your little business, which turned out to be pretty good. But now you're doing that exact role. You're coaching and helping other Farmers Insurance agents build their business, right?
Yes.
And so what does that entail? What are you working with them on? How do you build success into a farmer's insurance agency?
Well, this starts from the ground up. And it depends on where they are in the process. Some of them are just beginning. Right now we have if anybody listening is actually looking for a career change, that is an entrepreneur, has an entrepreneur type spirit, we'd love to talk to you because we have four openings and only four. Mm-hmm. Once those are filled, then we just build up from that point. And when I say build up, I mean build within each agency. So we have a goal of 33 agencies. Right now we're at 29.
Mm-hmm.
Once we fill those recruitment spots, then we go on to each and individual agency and grow from within. So the ones that are just starting, we help them grow, you know, along that path. The ones that are a little bit more tenured, we help them with, grants or funding, and we also help them with their numbers and the way that they're going about engaging in the community. to make larger numbers.
For somebody that would be interested maybe in a career switch or starting out new and fresh, and you know, for instance, you're going to be coming, speaking to my class, my sales management class at the University of Arizona,
yes.
And you're going to be talking to those students, and I bet you to a person, not a one of those students in the Eller College of Management that are sitting in that class, I think there's 70 in the class, I bet you not one of them has thought about insurance as a goal,
right.
Or that's going to be the place that I go. But it can turn out to be a pretty good career, and specifically this idea of residual income. You know, if you're a young person and you land a couple of good contracts and they stay with the farmers for 20, 30, 40 years, and you're an agent for a long period of time, that's just every month, they cycle every month. And so from a success standpoint of a farmer's agent, you help them build their business, and then their own personal prosperity and success is a result of that hard work.
Yes. You know, there's a new thing that that farmers has now that they didn't have when I started, and it's a protege program. The protege program allows you to jump in, like jump in Tucson.
Right, I like that.
Plug there. So allows you to jump into the farmer's insurance agency role as an agent. However, you're not a full agent. You're a protege. So I think programs like this really are starting to come back.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of different kind of businesses, and I'm so glad it's happening at Farmers, because we're seeing tremendous success in proteges coming in, learning the business from somebody else. They go in through the program for about a year. Once they've gone through it, then they can become their own agent. They can open up their own agency, and that also knocks out a couple of different requisites that are put in place if you didn't go down that path.
Yeah. So a guy like Jose, who is learning, learning the craft, he's a good example of someone that's a young person that's looking at the possibility of a career in insurance and becoming a protege first and learning with you and being your shadow for a while, really gets them acclimated to what it would be like to be your own agent.
And he's in the interview process, yes.
Right. So he might be one of those four that gets one of those positions. You know, insurance is one of those things. You don't think about it much. You get it, you know, and then you know, what am I going to buy and how much do I need and all that stuff. And sure, certainly the agent walks you through that. But, you know, insurance is one of those things you don't think about until you think about it and you need it.
Yes.
And when you need it, you are really so thankful. Just look at these poor people over in California who either their insurance was, you know, lapsed or whatever, and they lose their whole entire livelihood, everything they had, gone. All they have is themselves and their life and maybe their pet. And insurance is really important, and we don't think about it until we need it. And when we need it, boy, do we need it. And car accident, you know, we drive to work every day. We make, you know, go around all over Tucson driving on these roads and stuff, and we don't even really think about it until you have that darn car crash. And then all of a sudden, how your insurance reacts to that and how your company and the service that you get from your agent, how important that is.
Yes, and I've actually had a farmer's insurance claim myself. I was rear-ended by a policeman. I won't say which police agency, but but yeah, I was a police in his car. He had the lights on, going full blast down Stone Avenue, probably 100 miles per hour. Man,
right.
I think I would have been going faster. He was 23 years old,
right?
And so this is years back, but you know, farmers handle it brilliantly,
right? Right,
and not because of an agent. Yeah, I was an agent at the time, but right. I was able to sit there and kind of have a testimony of my own. But you know, when it comes down to it, insurance agents, they sell money. They sell money that the just in case piggy bank that you need when you need it.
Right.
And they're, for example, the wildfires that you were talking about. You know, people can't save up that much money.
Mm-hmm.
People don't have that much money on the side.
Right.
When everything goes, insurance steps in.
Right. And the same thing is true of us, you know, say a married couple or a partners or whatever in a company or whatever, and someone unfortunately passes. That life insurance isn't really for the person that dies.
Yeah.
It's for the person that's left behind. Where do they go? Where does the spouse go? Where does the partner in the business go if one of the key people is gone? So you help your agents kind of build that legacy as well, right?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of them are really good at it. Some of them just need, like the golf swing. We've been on the golf course here recently. all of us in this room, actually, this golf course.
Yeah.
Recently, and you know, it's just a little tweak in your swing, and that's all it takes, and you're off and running.
It's funny that you say that, because our good friend Sixto Molina, who is goes to therapy Thursday and Sundays playing golf a couple times a week, he calls it therapy. You know, he just told me just this past 2 weeks ago. He said, you know, he tweaked his swing just a little bit, and he won this golf tournament, and he was just a little, you know, he'd been playing golf for years and years and years, yet someone pointed something out to him, and he went back to the fundamentals. We called it blocking and tackling in football. He went back to the fundamentals, and he says it improved his game. He shot a 69 the other day, which was, you know, I shoot 69 on the first four holes, and he shot a 69 after 18 holes. So someone is Roman Campuzano, a Farmers Insurance agency business consultant. Obviously, you're trying to recruit four new people to be agents for you and to build the Farmers brand here in the growing Tucson metropolitan area. But just from the listener's viewpoint and a customer that would be saying, hey, maybe it's time for me to take a look, see, make sure I have enough for house insurance, make sure I have enough car insurance, make sure I have enough life insurance, what do you suggest they do? Obviously, call a Farmers agent, but...
Well, give me a call. I can point you in the right direction. I can put you in touch with somebody that's like-minded after I talk to you for a little bit. And my phone number is 520-833-3685. I'm also Googleable. Look for me online. I'm happy to speak with you on any platform, whether social media or just email direct.
You are an amazing social media guy. You are everywhere on social media. Without Morgan, thank you, Morgan, for what you do for me. Without Morgan, I wouldn't be on social media at all. But you're amazing. We're sitting someplace, and you take a picture, and all of a sudden it's out to the world. Sees us. Well, Roman Campuzano, agency business consultant for Farmers Insurance. Full circle back the place you started in insurance. A great company and a great, legacy in Tucson, Arizona. So thank you for being here. Thank you for what you do for the Morning
Morgan
Voice.
Bill, thank you.
You are amazing. Thank you, Roman Campuzano. We'll come back after the break and talk to our good friend Billy Netherton from Professional Bartenders. He's a good friend of the show and has an office right across the parking lot, actually. So we'll be talking to him in just a minute. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, and this is The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. I'm in here banging on the table and having a blast. Bartenders, our good friend Bill Netherton is here. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Top of the morning, everybody. Great to be here with you. Happy Friday.
Bill and I are good friends. We go back, oh, goodness gracious, 30, 40 years now. We've known each other a long time since you started Professional Bartenders. In the studio with me this morning as well is our good friend Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's fantastic. She's been doing a great job with us. And with us still is our good friend Roman Campuzano, who helps me out as a co-host and as a host of my show every once in a while when we were back on Jump in Tucson and now with The Morning Voice. Good morning again. How are you, Roman?
Good morning. Life is good.
Yeah, so we talk about networks, Bill. We were talking with Roman about networking and how important it is. Your business is based on networking, isn't it?
Yes.
Knowing people, right?
All networking, all relationships. Every day you wake up and you think, okay, it's a new day. I look at business like Las Vegas. Every day is a grand opening. And you want to treat every one of your clients, whether it's a small gathering or a large gathering, treat everybody like every day's grand opening. You're excited, you're ready to serve these people and give them this great experience so they can be a guest at their own party.
That's fantastic. You know, when Gene Ackerley, our father, was in charge of Ackerley Advertising for those many years, we had an office at the DoubleTree Hotel, and people, our clients, would walk through that front door, and he had that same thought. Doesn't matter who it is, they walk through that front door, they're the most important person, and drop everything you're doing and make them feel welcome, make them feel like a guest.
Right. You know, Roman mentioned earlier, I was listening to the show on the way in, and, you know, you have to have a servant's heart, especially in hospitality. And I got the bug early on when I was just 13 years young at Westward Liquor Resort, as you know that story. I was bussing tables in the Gold Room, but that's where it started for me. And I got the bug. That's where I cut my teeth, and I was there for from junior high and eighth grade until I graduated from Canyon Del Oro High School, and I've been in the business ever since.
And it's been great. You've done a lot of things in business, but getting this whole concept of being a guest at your own party really kind of came about as you taking care of all the stress and details. You think about, for instance, a corporate event, or you think about probably the most significant one that a family might go through in many cases is a wedding, when you have a family member getting married and you're responsible for that engagement package of making that happen. Worrying about all the details is really a stressful thing. It's fun and exciting, but it's also very stressful.
It is. There's a tremendous amount of stress for the families, especially picture this, you're a family with your only daughter.
Right.
Who's having a wedding, and there's no do-overs.
Right.
The photographer better have film in the camera.
Right.
The caterer better have enough food. You better not run out of ice for the bartending. But if we can alleviate those pressures for people, and we do that. When I meet with my clients, I have an air of confidence about me because I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And I love to partake that feeling with them so they feel comfortable knowing that all of these particulars are going to be in place and they don't need to worry about those things. They can focus their attention and their energies in other areas.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking about, Roman and I have been to many of your events and have, he has the nuts on the bar, which is great. That's a nice touch. Yeah,
absolutely.
Jack, you and I have been to a lot of Billy's events, right?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Jack has been there.
Jack's really tall.
Yes. We used to put the Hershey's miniature chocolates out.
Right.
And this couple showed up to a party one evening and they said, look, it's the chocolate bartenders. We saw you earlier today at a U of A graduation gathering where we had chocolates out on that bar as well.
Right.
So it was so funny.
It is really a nice touch, those delicious party nuts that you put out and things like that.
That's individual servings, though, Ed.
Yeah,
you can't have it a bowl there.
Yeah.
You know?
It's 20 years ago we did, but now it's individual serving. But it's a nice touch. It's a nice touch. I was sitting here thinking, Bill, what's the biggest event you've done where you've just had, a tremendous amount of bartenders and what was the biggest event?
A couple of them come to mind. First of all, there was the 70th anniversary for, remember, Thomas Davis Clinics?
Big time.
They had a thing, and the whole theme was Oscars night.
Right.
And outside of Foothills Mall. They had the red carpet out there on the east side of the mall. They had the searchlights,
mm-hmm.
and we had multiple bars inside, and that one itself was probably a couple thousand people.
Right.
But that was the whole theme, and the energy there was just like you were in Hollywood at Oscars night or whatever, wherever they hold that at.
Right.
But the other one was Arizona football for homecoming.
Right.
Oh, all the beer gardens and all the associated areas. I remember we had about 70 bartenders.
Right.
It was all hands on deck. And that's great fun when it all comes together with all the behind the scenes planning and you got this great team ready to go. That's exciting about being in business.
Yeah, you've helped out with a lot of those athletic events, but certainly U of A tailgate parties and the Arizona Bowl over the last decade or so, you've helped out with that. And it's amazing when you get that many people all in one place at one time, how fast your people have to work, but also have quality and great service at the same time. And it's just one bag of ice after another coming through, isn't it?
Yeah. It takes a village. You have to have a network, and it's all about the setup, really is. With what we do, people say, well, the party starts at 5. What time are you going to be here, 4:30? I said, oh, no. We're going to be there an hour and a half to 2 hours before because we have to unload the van, the product, the supplies, the equipment. Then we have to set everything up and chill everything. So it really is about preparation. But once you're prepared, then you're ready for the rest of the shift.
I won't mention the college. I won't say University of Wyoming, but your group was taking care of the VIP tent for the, this was a couple of years ago, for
the Cowboys?
Wyoming Cowboys visiting for the Arizona Bowl, and they had this VIP tent that myself and Sixto and a couple of other, I think Roman was there, we were supposed to be the greeters and so forth. Holy smokes.
It 4,000 people, Ed.
It was amazing, and it was non-stop, just non-stop, and it was almost overkill.
And you thought our community was thirsty. These Cowboy fans, when they travel to Tucson for this great weather and the Arizona Bowl, man, it's fantastic.
That's great. So your company's name is Professional Bartenders and Unlimited. And you're Unlimited because obviously that's an LLC kind of a name, but it also is you do more than just set up a bar and serve drinks. You're a consultant, right?
Yeah, we're consultants. We try to take all that guesswork out of it for our clients. Like I will say, hey, who's your caterer going to be? Or, You know, do you need tables and chairs? Do you need design? Do you need floral? Do you need photographers? So we have a network of people that we like to work with. Matter of fact, on our website, probartenders.net, we do have a resources page with many of these people listed on there. So it's a great place to visit.
And those people that are on your website are people that you've worked with before. They're not just fly-by-night companies you don't know anything about. These are all people that you would recommend and would, well, obviously put them on your website. You wouldn't put them on there if you didn't think they did a good job.
Correct. You find people you want to work with, good vendors, and everybody's in this together to provide a great experience, ultimately, for the guests.
And so one of those experiences, now that spring has sprung and it's going to be 75 degrees today, and you know our winter lasted, what, a week and a half or whatever, but it's just, you know, we had the gem show, we got the rodeo this weekend, we got, you know, baseball coming up, we got all sorts of things happening, and March Madness is happening as well. This is the season for parties, isn't it? And graduations are happening soon, and weddings begin the spring and summer wedding cycles.
You know,
after
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, everybody was kind of partied out. January always starts slow, and then right now we're ramping things up, and we should be busy all the way until the middle of June.
Right.
So we're grateful for that. Keep calling Tucson. We need to have more parties.
Yeah. you had a nice party over at your facility when you were celebrating an anniversary. You've been around for, what, 2 or 3 years now?
A few weeks now. We celebrated January 13th was our 40th anniversary. I started the company and founded it in 1984 out of the back of my 1977 Chevy van, literally.
Yeah.
And I still have that van. It's parked in front of my shop right now.
Yeah, I drive by it every Friday and see it.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And there for a long time, you know, you worked out of a house. You had cases.
22 years.
Cases of alcohol and storage and stuff at your house. It was an amazing that you moved from that. Now you have this beautiful, gorgeous facility. And
thank you so much.
And doing great work.
Dream come true to have your own turnkey for your building.
Right.
Like I said, we had 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound sack, to put it mildly.
Right.
So purchasing the building is just an absolutely beautiful thing. It enables us to grow and better serve our community.
Right. Yes. And you've got good people. You know, we know this. Roman knows this. Roman's recruiting for Farmers Insurance right now, getting good people. You've got a couple of good people, Brian Wilson and Sistine.
Joe Cedillo. Joe's our back of the house operation guy. Sistine is the office manager. She really is the engine that makes it run internally. And Brian's great with community relations. And we've all been together for a long time and simply could not do it without those guys and the rest of the team that's on our winning roster.
Right, and there's lots of folks. Morgan would be a good example. Morgan could bartend for you. She's a bartender out at Little Abner's and was the manager at Growlers for a while, so she knows how to bartend. But you have a lot of people that are 1099s that come in and help you. Like when you need 70 bartenders, you know where to go get them.
Correct. Yeah. Most of our team are classified as employees now, because if you look at the category, if we know they're just a one-off, then we're just going to write them a check for that event. Other than that, everyone's going to get on board and plugged in for the long haul.
That's good. We're talking to a former HR guy over here, Roman, who it's important that you have him on board and have him full-time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We know there's a discussion between what's an employee and what's an independent contractor.
Yeah.
And they're kind of defined if you really drill
down.
You
really do know your stuff.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm self-taught. I mean, I have 2 years of Pima Community College, and that blended in with on-hands experience. That's the best teacher that there ever could be.
College of Hard Knocks, as they call it, right?
There's been a lot of them, let me tell you.
When we come back, we'll talk some more with Bill Netherton, the owner of Professional Bartenders Unlimited, about his wonderful service business that he has that helps people be the guest at their own party. His beautiful building is right across the parking lot from where we're sitting at Bustos Media here at KVOI 1030 AM. You're listening to The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Billy, we really appreciate the fact that you brought samples over with you this morning, so we are sampling all the things that Professional Bartenders Unlimited provides to people. So thank you for bringing in these samples this morning. This is great.
Nothing better than a golden margarita to kick off the weekend, right, Ed?
Absolutely.
All that extra salt on the rim and that fresh lime. I mean, that doesn't make you thirsty. Nothing will.
That is fantastic. You know, we got Roman Campuzano with us, our good friend. Good morning again, Roman.
Yes. Roman's drooling over there. I can see.
You know, he had to put his straw down in order to talk.
You guys are sharing.
Ding, ding. We have a winner.
Yeah. And with us is Morgan Murphy. We were just talking about Morgan becoming Morgan Murphy McBride and a wedding package. Let's talk about bridal. Professional Bartenders Unlimited will be at the bridal fair this week. weekend. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have it's going to be a great show, the Bridal Expo, happening from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Convention Center. We're going to have a great-looking booth there, as are other vendors that all specialize in the wedding industry. If you're thinking about getting married or need some ideas or just want to do something different on a Sunday, just stop on by and say hello. It's going to be great fun. They usually have fashion shows. There's going to be DJs there. There's just a lot of good energy going on for a few hours on a Sunday to do something different.
Well, I think that's going to be great. I think we piqued the interest of Morgan Murphy, did we not?
Yeah, I got to go.
Hey, speaking of weddings and packages and costing, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, a lot of people now are having backyard weddings, mm-hmm. of that nature. If you look at the price point compared to the resorts and the hotels, basically, for $20 per person, we could provide a guest with four drinks per person, which works out to about $5 per drink. Now, that's based on an event of maybe 100 people or more. The lesser guest count, the higher the per person cost, obviously. Right. But if you think about what you would pay just to go out somewhere for a glass of wine, a beer, or a margarita, it's going to be, you know, $8 to $14, where for basically $20 per person, you're going to get four beverages per person. Those are alcoholic beverages. And of course, we provide all of the non-alcoholic beverages for those who don't partake.
Yeah, I went to one of your events in a backyard. It was a little bit of time ago, but it was actually a pre-wedding party event. And it was in a backyard and your folks were there. And it was really, really classy. Really, really classy. And
Thank you.
It takes the onus off of the homeowner too to worry. You're
we're full service.
They're trained and they know not to overserve and all those things.
Yeah. You know, we all have an obligation to the community, whether we know people or not, to serve in a safe and efficient manner. We want everyone to get home safe, and we want those that are going the opposite direction on the roadway to get home safe as well. So we're very in tune with alcohol awareness, and we want to make sure that everyone has a great, safe experience. And in regards to insurance, we're super proud of our track record. We have never had an accident, claim, or mishap, and we're in our 41st year, and I don't even know if that's even possible with
any
businesses.
Yeah.
But we take great pride in that. And I know the folks at Crest Insurance Group, Cody Ritchie, and them are happy that we haven't called them either in that regard.
Business insurance, yeah.
And it's expensive, let me tell you.
Yeah. And, you know, and Roman, talking about that, it's important that people know that when they're working with companies that are successful and so forth, that they are insured and they have the right credentials to do what they need to do, right?
Absolutely. You know, you're doing a great job by having that great track record, but, you know, it's there for the what if.
Yeah,
you know,
that's, it is. It's a big deal.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a reason they charge what they do for this general liability and liquor liability, and the number's shocking. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a lot of money for a small business like mine and all the other small business operators here in our community.
But that takes the onus off of the homeowner and you take on that responsibility, and that's part of the being a guest at your own party.
It takes some of it off. Everybody's, you know,
I'm
the son of an attorney.
Yeah.
My dad used to have a little statue. I won't say what it said, but it said sue the something or other, but I won't repeat that on the air right now.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing I wanted to touch on was when you hire professional bartenders, it's really an experience. You're not just getting a bartender. Right. You're getting a good communicator, someone to manage the operation for you. So like you said, so they can be a guest at their own party. And we take all of those worries out of the equation.
Right. And so especially if you're doing it at your home, you don't want to be concerned about all the details and so forth. You want to be with your guests and you want to share,
right.
Especially if you're if it's a wedding event or something, you want to enjoy with your family and friends and your daughter or son, whoever's getting married.
Correct.
You don't want to be running around like a crazy person trying to make it all happen.
We did a wedding reception a while back, and you'll appreciate this, Morgan, is rather than a traditional caterer, they had multiple food trucks on site with different food offerings.
Wow.
And that was it's just such a great thing to have these different ways that you can approach this.
So if someone wanted to get a hold of Professional Bartenders Unlimited and get a hold of Bill Netherton, how would they do that?
The best way to do it is just go to our website, which is probartenders.net. We have an online form that takes literally 60 seconds to complete, gives us all the information that we need to service your event, the date, the time, the expected guest amount, the location, the occasion, and then we're off and running. We also have rates and packages, Ed, on the website, starting with 50 people all the way to 250 people. It's very itemized. It's detailed. It gives you the per-person cost, supplies cost. It's a great resource to get your pricing for any event that you're planning. And then Sistine, our fantastic office manager, can always customize your proposal as well.
Right. And then you are obviously well-versed at serving all over Tucson, no matter where it is, out in the desert, at a backyard, at a hall, wherever it is. You've been everywhere, haven't you?
Have bar, will travel. And we've set up bars in some crazy spaces before.
Yeah, and I've been there with you on those. It's great to have Bill Netherton, the owner of Professional Bartenders Unlimited, 40 years, going into 41st year here in Tucson, Arizona. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you, Roman Campuzano from Farmers Insurance,
thank
for being
you for
here with us today.
Yes.
And Morgan Murphy, thank you for always doing the good work you do for Ackerley.
Is that it? It went so fast.
It's amazing how fast. And thank you, Matt Neely, for all you do behind there.
Matt Neely's fantastic.
Great music today. We appreciate that professional bartender music. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI, where we talk about success stories. Roman Campuzano, Billy Netherton, some great success stories in Tucson, Arizona. And we'll be back after the break. Thank you for listening to The Morning Voice. Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. This is the Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona and talk about all the wonderful research and outcomes that are happening. And well, we're going to be talking this morning about fire and of tree rings and all sorts of wonderful things. So good morning, Morgan. You're with us, Morgan Murphy. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to get hooked up with our link here in just a second. So tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about when we launch this concept of fire and tree rings.
Yes, so we're actually talking with Dr. Falk, and we're talking about how the fires are actually decreasing from what they used to be. So it's a really interesting concept because everybody's been really concerned about the fires, and they seem to be increasing, but with Dr. Falk's research, we're actually finding out the opposite.
Great. So Dr. Falk is with us.
And if we could get everybody to mute on this side, or I think that's what we need to do. Sorry to break the fourth wall there, but we're rolling here, so we're good.
Okay. Sounds good. I think we got it now. So Dr. Falk, good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice.
Thanks for having me here.
Fantastic. It's amazing how things work when you need them to work. So this is great. You know, infamy. One of the great things about The Morning Voice and talking about wonder at the University of Arizona is talking about world-renowned things that people all around the world, and, you know, I often come back to one thing that's really important at the U of A is space and the NASA programs and all the wonderful things that the scientists at the U of A have done there. But another area that the U of A is world-renowned for is its tree ring research lab and all the things that happen with trees and the historical perspective that trees give us in the world. It's a pretty amazing thing. Could you tell us a little bit about the tree ring lab and tree ring research and how the U of A got to be such a world-renowned entity in this whole field of looking back and looking forward?
Certainly. The Laboratory of Tree Ring Research at the University of Arizona was the first laboratory of its kind in the world, and it is remaining still the oldest laboratory studying the science of tree rings and what we can learn from them. It was originally founded by Andrew Ellicott Douglas, who was an astronomer, who had some ideas about the influence of solar variation on tree growth, and went to studying that. He was looking at cross sections of trees where he was living in Flagstaff. He was actually working as an astronomer in Flagstaff. But he turned out to be wrong about that. It turned out that the 11-year solar cycle is not visible in the variation of tree rings. But he was a good enough observer to realize that there was something else that was creating synchronous variation in multiple trees across a landscape. And he quickly realized that that factor had to be climate, so that the patterns of narrow and wide rings were reflecting climate variation that was common across all the trees. And from that simple, profound observation, the entire science of tree ring study has developed over the last 70 years.
So what basically a tree ring research then is, if you were to take a tree, you don't want to take it until it's not living anymore because you don't want to necessarily destroy it. But if you were to take a tree and do a cross-sectional cut of it, then you can see the actual rings that are some are small, some are larger, depending on that environmental impact of that tree. You can basically read the tea leaves, if you will, and tell what happened over those period of years, right?
As a matter of fact, we sample a lot of living trees using non-destructive methods. Excuse me. We can take what's called an increment core, which is a core of wood about the diameter of a pencil. Use a special tool to extract that from the tree. It does no harm to the tree. The tree rapidly fills that wound. For an organism the size of a tree, it would be roughly equivalent to a hypodermic needle in your leg. So it's a very small amount of wood that's extracted. That's how we sample living trees, by and large. Trees that are dead, either standing or down, as you say, we take cross sections, which does have the advantage of giving us a bigger view of the growth of the tree, although it's a lot more to carry out of the woods, I can tell you. Mm-hmm. But either way, yes, we are getting a cross section of growth over time. So you can think of the tree as an overlapping set of cones getting larger and larger. Each year's growth is superimposed on the growth of the previous year. And because of the remarkable properties of cellulose, which is the primary constituent of wood, cellulose and hemicellulose, those rings stay in place without change for centuries or even millennia. And it's that property, that retention property of wood, the remarkable ability of it to persist, that allows us to see back in time using the tree rings, which tell us something about the environment in which they were growing in the year that they formed. So if we have a tree with a 2,000-year-old ring, we can tell a lot about what was going on exactly in that year 2,000 years ago.
That's pretty amazing. And, you know, with the recent wildfires over in California, which obviously took center stage across the world of a terrible fire damage and many trees being affected by that, and some that would be affected by the fire but are still alive and actually make it through the fire and don't get burned up, then many years from now, people can see that there was a fire back in 2025, and they can see that in the tree rings, right? And for, say 50 years from now, you can actually see that damage from the fires, right?
We can see it hundreds of years after the fact. Right. And in fact, that what you're describing is the key to this project that we worked on. The way this works is that when trees are exposed to non-lethal fire, that is fire that does not kill the tree, their tissue often records a scar that eventually becomes embedded inside the wood in the tree as the tree continues to grow. It basically grows around the scar and heals it. Although in some cases, trees with multiple scars from repeated fires will retain a feature that you can see from the outside. We can actually see the edge of those scars just walking up to the tree. But one way or the other, the scar is embedded in the wood inside the tree. And by dating the tree rings where that scar occurs, we can date the fires. That's the basic principle of fire history, that as long as you can ascertain accurately what year a ring was formed in, then you can ascertain exactly what year the fire occurred in. And sometimes we can even date that to season. We can tell a spring fire from a summer or a fall fire. So by dating the rings, we date the fires. And this has been done now over 2,000 locations across North America based on tens of thousands of trees. It's a huge record of fire history. And there's really, I have to say, nothing quite comparable to this fire history record in the study of past ecosystems because of its accuracy in time and space. We know that the fire occurred exactly where that tree is sitting, and we know exactly the year or the season. So you can reconstruct past fires from other proxies, such as charcoal, but those are not as temporally and spatially accurate, although they go back longer. The best records for fire history are generally in the last 2,000 years, and most of them are in about the last 600 years.
So your research, recent research, with all these, you know, fires taking obviously a front page and on the news, and we think we're in a pretty fire-filled environment just lately, and so it's on the top of mind. But how has fire over the last, say, 1,000 years, how has fire affected across, if say, North America or even around the world? These trees can tell you what the persistence of fire has been over that period of time, right?
Yes. So we understand fire to be a stabilizing force, which is completely counterintuitive to the way most people think about it, because, to be honest, the way most people see fire is on the evening news, mm-hmm. and that tends toward the sensational. And so if a producer sends a camera crew out on a wildfire and they come back with a picture that shows some smoldering grass and small, you know, flame lengths of a few inches, the producer's going to say, what the heck were you doing out there? But the fact is, that's really closer to the normal fire behavior than what we see. I want to mention right at the beginning that this work was the result of a team led by Dr. Sean Parks of the U.S. Forest Service, and it shows the huge importance of federal scientists in collaboration with universities. And I say that because, as we know, federal science is really under attack right now. And so just want to acknowledge that everything we're talking about this morning is the result of this collaboration between universities and federal scientists who need our support.
That's interesting. I was just at the Ronald McDonald House yesterday, and I was driving away, and right across the street is the Carl Hayden Bee Research Center. And I was thinking that very thing, that, you know, that Carl Hayden Center's been there for a long time, but it's under attack right now, a bee attack, if you will. And it's yes. important that we are politically and from a research perspective and from a research one institution like the University of Arizona, that we really stay vigilant on making sure that we have this information that people can do their research and come up with this information. So,
yes, I'd have to say if your listeners take away one thing from this a program other than understanding fire a little better, it's the importance of this university federal collaboration, which is what has made U.S. science so advanced and so productive and is so at peril.
And the university is right in the middle of the center of Tucson. It is the biggest thing in the middle of Tucson, and it is important for just for us locally, for the economy and so forth, to keep these things going and keep research chugging along.
Right. So the picture that we see from this tree ring record is that the fires that used to occur in the U.S. don't look anything like the fires we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. These would have been mostly low severity and mixed severity ground fires burning in the understory, burning grasses and branches and small shrubs, maybe the occasional small tree. There are patches every now and then of crown fire. But the important thing is that there was a lot of such fires. They burned often all summer until the temperatures cooled off in the fall or winter rains came. Nobody came and put them out. There would have been low levels of smoke in the forest, you know, many summers, and people would have been accustomed to it. This is not true everywhere, I hasten to say. There are some ecosystems where fires burn differently, particularly up in the boreal forest in Alaska and Canada, where high severity fires are more the norm. But if you look at the map of how fires burned historically, the type of fire, the vast majority of area was burning with these low to moderate mixed severity fires that were nothing like the destructive fires we see today. And what these fires did is to keep the forest more open. We have millions of trees that have invaded these forests since we started keeping fires out. But historically, the forests were more open, and that meant that the trees were generally pretty healthy, right. And you had a very different kind of environment. And fire was the key process to maintaining that forest structure in the ecosystems where this was the norm.
That's great. That's a good tease for our next segment. When we come back, we'll talk with you a little bit more about controlled burn and controlled fire, and how sometimes burning a forest is actually a good thing for the forest and a good thing for maintaining the forest into the future. We'll be back after the break with Dr. Donald Falk, who's a professor of natural resources, the chair of global ecology and management, and he's an affiliated faculty member of the Arizona Institutes for Resilience at the University of Arizona. And you're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, along with my assistant, Morgan Murphy. We are talking with Dr. Donald Falk, a professor of natural resources, the chair of global ecology and management, and part of the Arizona Institutes for Resilience, and an expert in tree ring research at the University of Arizona. And so we appreciate you being here. This is one of my favorite parts of The Morning Voice, is to talk to scientists and researchers at the university who are doing great work for the betterment of not only our community, but people all around the world. So Morgan, you had a question for Dr. Falk.
Yeah, so I was reading your article, and I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about the fire deficit and how exactly we got to this point.
Yes, thanks, Morgan. That is really, in a sense, the key finding in this new work. So the kinds of fires we were describing earlier were much more common historically, and by historically I mean prior to, say, 1900, so 120 to 130 years ago. Fires were burning in locations all over the United States, especially in the West. And so we used all the sites for which we had tree ring records, as we described in the first segment, and a fire record that shows us exactly when, where fires were burning. And we compared that record with how much fire those same sites are seeing today using modern satellite records and maps. So this was the basis for comparison. We're exactly comparing the same sites, century-long fire history record, with those same sites, how much they're burning today. What we found was that the most common circumstance historically was that about 5 to 7% of those sites were experiencing fire every year, which means, if you do the math, that you would have all of those sites typically burning sometime in the over a 15 to 25 year period, whereas today the most common result is that none of them burn, or in fact only a handful experience fire. Historically, non-fire years, where really there was very little fire happening, was unusual. And today, because we're doing such a complete job, of keeping fire off the landscape, most of the time you have very little fire because we jump on it and put it out. So this is what creates the fire deficit, where we're just not having the kind of fire and the frequency of fire that forests need. And the consequence of that, the primary consequence of that, is that fuels, which is what fire lives on, have become super abundant due to this excluding fire from the landscape.
So we're talking with Dr. Donald Falk, professor of natural resources at the University of Arizona, and talking about tree ring research and fire, and how trees can give us a look into the past and maybe a crystal ball into the future as to how to manage fire and so forth. So Dr. Falk, you would probably suggest that using fire in a controlled way, like a prescribed burn, can actually be a cost-effective solution, maybe perhaps for some of these horrible, terrible crown fires that are happening, and getting rid of some of this this fodder for fires that permeates some of our forest management and even our urban management.
That's exactly right. These high severity, very destructive fires we're seeing are absolutely a consequence of our own actions. By excluding fire for the landscape for over a century, we have allowed these fuels to accumulate, and fuels are the main driver of fire behavior and fire severity. So when we see a fire burning the way it does on the evening news, with a few exceptions where, again, these crown fires are more natural, and that includes California chaparral ecosystems, by the way. We've created these fires by allowing fuels to accumulate. And so you're exactly right that to get ourselves out of this box we painted ourselves into, we have to treat these landscapes primarily with fire, by returning fire to the landscape. Now, having kept fire out of the system for 120 years, you can't simply light a match and stand back and expect a good outcome. That's, in fact, what we're seeing with these destructive fires. You have to take steps to get there. And generally, the way it goes is that you would thin the forest mechanically. You remove some of the millions of small trees, which it historically would not have been there, and reduce the, what are called the fuel loads, that is the amount of flammable vegetation that exists. And once you've done that, you've reduced the fuel the fuel that would drive fire behavior, drive extreme fire behavior, and then you can light a prescribed fire, which, as you say, is an intentional fire that you light for positive benefit and outcome. And that is done right now over millions of acres across the United States, and very, very effective technique. It's very cost-effective. Ultimately, what we want to get back to is where we're letting nature run the show. And there are a few places in the United States where that's true. The notable example in the Southwest is the Gila Wilderness in New Mexico, where in general, fire has been allowed to stay in the ecosystem and to do its job. And although the Gila has had some severe fires in some areas, by and large, they've had large fires, by which I mean 80 to 100,000 acres, that look a lot like those historical fires. So we know that this actually works. We know that it's possible, even in today's climate.
And would these fires start, like say in the Gila and so forth, these natural fires, most of them started by lightning? Is that how they would normally start?
The vast majority of them today start by lightning. Historically, that was true, but in addition, we understand that there's good evidence that native peoples that inhabited North America before Europeans arrived used burning as both a cultural and a very practical tool, and they knew how to use it very well. So a lot of the historical evidence of fire we see was probably influenced to some degree by native burning.
So how did their practices, these cultural practices, then contribute to the fire regimes that you're now studying in tree rings? How was this cultural view of fire and using it the way they did as native peoples, and kind of living with the land in the natural rhythms and cycles of fire? How did that all become as we urbanized, we said, well, let's let stuff grow everywhere and up around our houses and up around buildings and not let fire happen. Now we've created this monster that is creating these huge fires. How did they live in order to be respectful of fire?
Right. I will say that I won't presume to speak for those cultures which right. were on the landscape for thousands of years. And there are many people in the Southwest who are experts in indigenous fire as a cultural practice, and they would have more insight into your question. What I can tell you is the practical result of it, which is that they were burning regularly near their settlements, possibly to help reduce the fire danger, because they understood that by keeping fuels low, you would reduce the fire danger to your village or settlement. Mm-hmm. But they also used it for promoting the growth of certain plant materials, such as the materials used for making baskets, which were a key cultural and economic product that was important to them, and fire promotes the growth of certain plants. They would also use it to help with hunting. So when you're burning grasses are co-evolved with fire for millions of years. And when grass burns, it resprouts from the growing point, which is at or below the surface of the soil, and it sprouts right back up. And that early grass growth is the most nutritious form of that regrowth. And animals that graze, like bison or deer, are very attracted to it because it's the best forage that they can find. We see this in the Great Plains, where bison, in areas today where there are bison and large prairie grasslands with fire, the bison will migrate to the areas that were burned sometimes in the previous year because that's the best forage. Well, native peoples who had lived here for thousands of years understood this, and they would actually use fire to create that that environment that the animals that they were hunting were attracted to. So their use of fire, I would say, was a range of very practical utilitarian purposes all the way to culture.
Amazing. Dr. Donald Falk, Professor of Natural Resources at the University of Arizona, talking about tree ring research and fire. Thank you for being a guest today. Thank you for being on The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host for the Friday Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things and good people at the University of Arizona. With me in studio is my assistant, my executive assistant, Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning, Dr. Ackerley.
My brother Bill is here with us as well, but on the line with us is one of my favorite Wildcats of all time. What a wonderful, wonderful person and a very talented guy. Good morning, Ricky Hunley. How are you?
Good morning, Ed. How you doing?
I'm doing great. As our listeners know, Ricky Hunley is the great linebacker from the University of Arizona football team who went on to be a consensus All-American and to be inducted into the National Football Hall of Fame and went on to play some pro football as well and ended up coaching with Coach Larry Smith at some college level and been around football for quite some time. And we're just bringing you on here because you get another. You're the most decorated football player in the history of the University of Arizona, and yet you're going to be inducted into another Sports Hall of Fame, the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame, in April. So congratulations to you on another accolade for your fine career.
Well, thank you, Ed. I really appreciate it.
You have been a great model for the University of Arizona, and you helped with the last head coach, Jed Fish, with him working with the team, and you being a great to come back to the University of Arizona and kind of, I'm just going to speak for you and say live out your dream of being back connected with the U of A football program. And now you're also working with Coach Brennan, and you're the executive director of player relations and external development at for the football team. What's it feel like to be back at your alma mater, to be working with these young men and doing these great projects that you're doing to make Arizona football the great thing that it was when you were there and now as it is building its great program again?
Well, I tell you, Ed, I mean, it took me 39 years to get back here, and I've always said Arizona, it's a destination job for me. It's, you know, it's not a stepping stone to the next thing. This is here, and this is where I want to be. This is where I'm going to retire, and I love it. And you know, and I love being around people who love the University of Arizona.
We have a great a facility that's right above your office. It's the Arizona Sands Club, and you and I trip into each other every once in a while at the Sands Club, like basically weekly. You and I are there. You've got so many things and going on in your job that you've got, and you're entertaining and so forth. But it's a remarkable football career in that 40 years out of full circle coming back and being able to participate in this. When you look back on your football career, specifically at the U of A, not necessarily your pro career, but your Hall of Fame college career, what do you think about? What do you think about when you think, man, what a time that was, and was great to be a consensus All-American? How does that go through you, Ricky Hunley, as you're thinking about your history here and legacy at the university?
I tell you one thing for sure, man, it goes fast. And, you know, I tell these kids all the time, I'm very blessed to have the opportunity to be around them every day and have a chance to, you know, share stories and, with the kids. And but it goes fast, and you got to make the most of it, you know. And there's a lot of kids now going into their senior years, and they don't realize their days are numbered. It'll be the last time they may ever play football, and the last time they have this opportunity to be in a rear, you know, locker room where you got the fellowship, you got the camaraderie and the culture. It's a special place to be. I can't tell you how much that I appreciate my time here at the university and the relationships that I've had over the years. I mean, a lot of those people are still friends and family, and you know, it's
right.
It's home. It's always great to come back.
Yeah. Speaking of family, you didn't just come to the University of Arizona. Heck, you brought the whole Hunley clan with you, and your mom, what a wonderful Wildcat fan, and all your brothers. Of course, Lamont played with you, and all of your other brothers. There's a lot of Hunleys roaming around Tucson these days.
There's about five of them.
And you all look alike. You could be quintuplets. You all look alike. It's amazing.
cousins, and, you know, so it's grown.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll continue to grow.
You know, you got to coach with the great Larry Smith. What a great guy, and both here at the U of A and ASU and Missouri and so forth. And you've got some other coaching experience also in the pros. But is there a remarkable experience that you had with Coach Smith, perhaps, say, at the U of A, that just really resonates with you as to what a great coach he was and what a great a mentor he was to you personally?
You know what? It really hit me when I decided to go into coaching. Larry, for years, would say, "Hey, Rick, if you ever want to coach, man, you know, I'd love to have you come coach with us." I said, "Coach Smith, man, thanks, but no thanks. I see the hours that you guys put in. I'm not interested in coaching." And, you know, because you were there, you know, early in the morning, late at night, clipping, cutting film, doing everything, and, you know, and everybody's problems are your problems when you're the head coach. And then he's like, "Well, just come out and just, you know, work the camp with the kids." And he was at USC, and I did. And then I just got bit by the bug, and it was just, I was in, and I became a GA. And the first day, he brought me into the staff room, and he told all the coaches, he said, "Look, I don't want you guys messing with him. I don't want you sending him to get your laundry, walking your dog, no hazing. Teach him how to be a coach." He said, "You got to be a teacher first before you become a coach. You teach him how to be a coach." And that's some of the greatest advice that I've ever gotten from a coach, you know, just how you treat people who want to do special things. And he was a special guy. I love him and miss him.
He sure was, and Cheryl's a wonderful person, and it was great to have them in our lives at the University of Arizona. We're talking with the great Ricky Hundley. We're going to take an early break here, Ricky, and I know you've got to go to an event here in just a few minutes, so when we get back, we'll just spend a minute or two talking about your current responsibility as Director of Player Development for U of A football, and we'll be back. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI 1030 AM with venerable Ricky Hundley from the University of Arizona football team. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host for the Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Morgan Murphy is with us, Bill Ackerley is with us, and our great friend, the most decorated University of Arizona football player of all time, Ricky Hundley, who's just going to be inducted in another Hall of Fame. He's part of the College Hall of Fame, the National Football Hall of Fame, and he's part of the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame this coming April up in Phoenix. He'll be inducted. Ricky, you are an amazing guy. You've got a job now as the Executive Director of Player Relations and External Development. The business of football sure has changed in the last 40 years, hasn't it?
It has. It is business. I mean, there's so many new jobs now in football. I never thought I'd see the day they had HR in football. I remember the time when I was in football and I got back, and one of the kids said he needed a personal day. He didn't feel like practicing the day. I'm like, "What? You talk personal day? I'm like, what is that?
We played with broken arms and broken noses, and he needs a personal day, huh? Come on."
Yeah. I actually had my knee replacement. One of the trainers would send me to get x-rays on my knees before I had surgery, and the doctor's looking at the x-ray, and she says, "Hey, when did you break your leg?" I said, "What are you talking about?" "Yeah, the x-ray says right there, you had a broken leg." I said, "I've never had a broken leg." "Yeah, you did. You had a broken leg."
Oh, that's amazing.
I played with a broken leg. He said, "Yeah." I was like, I'm screaming in the tram, "So you guys are soft. I played with a broken leg."
I love it. You know, you've had some great experience. You have obviously played with some wonderful people, including your brother, and lots of wonderful, talented people on your teams throughout the years. You know, I just have to give a shout out to our good friend Tyler Loop, who is a student of mine at the U of A, who kicked that 62-yard field goal. Man, records are made to be broken, aren't they? And we're looking forward to having a couple of linebackers who take after the Ricky Hundley mode and get us back to the Teddy Bruschi and Ricky Hundley era, where we have just a menacing defense. I'm all in with defense. I love offense and I love scoring, but Ricky, defense wins games, doesn't it?
Defense wins championships.
There you go. You know, defense wins championships.
They can score, but you know, they can't score if you can stop them.
Right.
And I look forward to passing the baton to someone like that myself.
Yeah, that'd be great. But we don't want them to do it too quickly because we like to honor you as the most honored football player of all time. You know, Ben just sent me a note, and I guess I'm invited to the breakfast and ball coming up, which is a nice little activity that the football team has in the spring where they get an inside look at team meetings and get to see the practice. I'm fortunate that I get to go see you guys in that experience. But it has changed. It's different. The NIL is here, and so external development is really important for football and developing players and player relations. You have a very important job, don't you?
Well, you know, it's important that the kids get out and be a part of the community because they're a part of the fabric of the community. And it's like we've done things like, you know, just getting them all out to go to the rodeo for the first time, getting custom cowboy hats. And now this year there's a bunch of guys who want to go back, you know, just doing things that people see them out and that, you know, they care about this town and this community just as much as anybody else. And it helps to sell tickets. It helps to fill the stadium, you know, when you get out and you get involved. You know, you just can't sit in your room and play video games and think that that's going to be enough. This is not professional ball, you know, although a lot of people think it is. This is college football, and it's all about community. And those are the memories that we take with us when we leave here. It's those relationships that we had with our teammates and with the community. I mean, I remember having to, you know, work little summer jobs and pick weeds and, you know, and pick my, you know, pick weeds at friends' houses to earn money, get a plane ticket to go home. And, you know, and now some of those people are CEOs of huge companies, and
yeah.
You know,
think of what it would have been like. Think of what it would have been like if they had NIL back when you were playing, Ricky. That would have been amazing. Oh, yeah, totally different game now. I know you got to get
one of those artificial intelligence things where it says, "Tell me what your NIL number would be if you were playing in this day." They said 5 million. Like, right. I'll take it.
Well, you are worth $1 million in my mind. You're a great guy. We love having you come over and speak to our kids at the Eller College at the University of Arizona. You've been so gracious to me and my family and to the Ackerley family over the years, golf tournaments, and every time I see you, you give me a big hug. You're a big guy, but you have a big heart, and we really appreciate you, Ricky. And congratulations again on your one more induction into another Hall of Fame, being the most decorated U of A football player of all time. We love you. You're doing a great job, and thank you for all you do for Arizona Wildcats.
Thank you, Ed. Anytime, just don't hesitate to call.
Okay, we'll be in touch, and that was the great Ricky Hundley. He was a linebacker back in the Larry Smith days. I know, Matt, what did you think of Ricky Hundley when he was amazing, wasn't he?
Absolutely. A powerful force, you know, and that was when the University of Arizona football just started asserting itself on a national stage.
Right. You know, we had Jack Rabbit Hernandez, we had Art Lupino, and we had some pretty good guys in the 40s and 50s and 60s and stuff. But man, it was when Ricky Hundley came in and that whole group, when they made a name for specifically defense at the University of Arizona. Sure. And he was an incredible, incredible talent. I don't think people realize what a great talent he was. Well, obviously, he's the most decorated, but he was an amazing, fascinating guy to watch play football.
Absolutely.
And he's doing a great job here at the University of Arizona now. He has done so many events for me. He's done golf tournaments. He's done special appearances. He's done the National Football Foundation. He's done so many things for us. He's a pretty good guy. Did you know who Ricky Hundley was, Morgan, before we had this conversation?
I did not.
See, we need to, this is one of the legacy things I talk about at the U of A, is they need to know the people that went before them. Yeah. They all know Tyler because he's in our class, and they know that he kicked a 62-yard field goal, but there are guys that went before him who've made a great name for themselves, and Ricky's a really good example.
And really, what's so special about those guys in the early 80s, I don't think the punishment from the Tony Mason era had kicked until about maybe 82 or 83. I forget it. You were here. I wasn't. But these guys stepped into the breach knowing that the school would be on probation at some point because of stuff that happened in the late 70s under another coach.
Yeah.
They still came here. They still gave it their all. They still had some big, huge wins. Hundley in particular, I don't know if he was in the game or not with injury, but they knocked off USC when they were number one in Los Angeles. I lived there at the time. The Stones were playing there the next night.
Let's just go with the rumor that he had a broken leg and he was playing with a broken leg.
At the LA Coliseum, which was just a huge win. And then they beat Notre Dame in South Bend. So at that point, you know, the Cats they'd beaten in 67, they beat Ohio State at the Horseshoe, which was no small feat. But in the early 80s, that's when they really started asserting themselves and becoming noticed on the national radar.
And it was great to have Coach Larry Smith. I know he went on, and it was a little tough for some people to have him go to USC. But, you know, I look at Larry Smith. I look even at Jed Fish, who's maybe having a little bit of trouble up in Washington. You know, we get these athletes to the University of Arizona, and even basketball, even a better example of this. And they're extremely talented, and we're encouraging them to perform at the highest level and do the best they can. And we're teaching them at the other college to get the most out of everything they can. And then when they go one and done to the NBA, or they switch coaching jobs and go somewhere else, people complain that, well, where's your loyalty and so forth? Hey, wait a minute. They're ascending their career, and that is a powerful thing for them. And then some would argue that maybe when Larry left, it was a little bit of a hard pill to swallow, but he went on and did a great job there. And it was as Ricky said, he's a great mentor to many young men across Missouri at USC and at U of A.
I was actually at Larry Smith's final game as USC head coach. I think it was called the Freedom Bowl or something.
Right.
It was at Anaheim Stadium. Fresno State came in and rocked USC.
Right,
and that ended up, as it turns out, being Larry Smith's last game as coach of USC.
But we've had some great coaches at the U of A, and you know, the great Dick Tomey and Larry Smith. And I'd even put, even though some people maybe were a little disgruntled that Jed went up to Washington, you have to say he came in and brought an NFL man. His coaching resume seems to be growing, and he brought a different, you know, he's in tune with this new NIL and this new format of football. I think it's important. I know as a fan, I sit at I have the good fortune of sitting 9 rows up on the west side of the stadium at the 45-yard line. My family's had those seats for 70 years, and I just love college football. I just think I just love it. I love it. Even if the U of A gets beat, I still love going to the game and watching college football. And you do too, don't
I think you? The thing about college football for me is, and it's changed with the NIL and the money, but for me, the thing about college football is you get a group of 18 to 22-year-old guys geeked up to they don't know that they're not supposed to lose a game.
Right.
And so you can have those David and Goliath kind of games
that
you don't often see in the NFL. And I think that's what's the most fun about it. And University of Arizona made multiple decades work out of going out and surprising people, winning games that they shouldn't have won. And that's the fun of it.
That's the fun of it. And then the Big 12 now, it's going to be interesting to see how we fare over the next couple of years at some of these big powerhouse schools. And let's see if we can, you know, I made it to the Rose Bowl one time, but I went to watch just a regular game. We never made it to the actual Rose Bowl. So maybe there's some hope here in my lifetime that we can get to a major bowl game and be part of that experience. Well, it's great to have a great Wonder Series today and talking with Dr. Falk, but also with the great Ricky Hunley, the Executive Director of Player Relations and External Development at the U of A. I see Ricky all the time down at the stadium and down at the Arizona Club and so forth. He is just a great ambassador for the University of Arizona and one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet in a million years. So God bless him, and congratulations to him for being inducted into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame up in Phoenix. This is The Morning Voice. Coming up on Monday, we have Lydia Ronda. She'll be here talking with Arizona Rainmakers and doing her great work with the community and education and all those great things. And we'll be back next Friday with success stories and wonder from the University of Arizona on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. This is The Morning Voice.